Welcome to Accounting High.
So one of the things that we don't fully recognize that humans do with technology is they actually sit at the seams between a lot of technical systems. They pull something from one technical system, they make meaning out of it, and then they input it into another technical system to do a new bit of work. And the ability of the whole tech stack to reduce the number of points of contact that humans have is going to be really important for the work that humans do in the future.
May I have your attention, please?
If you're listening on the show, hear what GACON can do for you.
It's accounting integrators. We integrate in Google Sheets with different accounting software, Xeros, QuickBooks, Sage, FreshBooks. We do two-way synchronization to download raw data, reports, consolidation reports, and do bulk upload.
Corey, you want to say a couple words? You're like the student sitting in the front row.
Where do you see people using the product more? Like, is it more in the reporting or the data side?
Why are you really using GCON? To automate the process. So basically, we're helping accountants, business owners to have these numbers as accurately as possible and as fast as possible. We're managing a lot of data in both directions.
This excites me. As someone that's coming from building custom integrations, this is basically a tap into the API, pulling invoice data, location data, payment data, line items, customers, right? This becomes very powerful. It's more than just reporting.
You're limited by your imagination.
Yes, that's true.
One of the key features is not only that two-way sync for a lot of people, but I think it's just extracting raw data. It's great to have report, and those are super valuable, but where my head went to is like building some of the working papers for the balance sheet. If you can start to pull some transaction level detail or account level detail, that can automate a lot of the accounting process that many people just don't like doing.
This is a huge, huge unlock. I've been wanting to do things like this forever with access to all the data pieces. You can pull data from one client and another and compare them all.
And then you can go even further, right? It will be your dashboards. This will be your BI solutions, your presentation layers, and that will give you huge visibility, right, to the client. They don't like to dig in numbers. They want to see it colorful on the graph, your next presentation layer. People use us a lot this way too.
You could also export that data into your QuickBooks or Xero.
That can be done too, yep.
Ooh. Secure, automated, easy, two-way sync. Head explosions going on. That's awesome. What can our listeners do? What can they do to sign up? Like, this is the call to action here.
They can access us through our website or go to Google Workspace Marketplace, type GACON, and you will have all our products there. Install it and go ahead.
G-ACON, what's the website URL? We can put that in the notes.
ACON, A-C-C-O-N dot services.
Okay.
You guys have a 14-day free trial for anyone that wants to test it out, experiment. That's what I'll be doing next.
Absolutely free. They don't have to put any credit cards. We just want them to be comfortable and see if it still really works for them. Go and try us out.
May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to Accounting High. It's freshman year at a brand new school. Here, we have no rules in place as we're on a mission to set our own traditions. So hang tight and learn with us as we grow. At Accounting High, you can expect to gain knowledge in a completely different way than what you may be used to, with some fun and oftentimes colorful conversations. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here's your chance to be a part of an unforgettable experience redone. While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you. In addition, share this episode on social media tagging us at Accounting High. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
I repeat. May I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
The events and suggestions are not to be taken lightly. Children should not partake in the listening
of this podcast.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Liz.
We're gonna have a problem here.
Class is in session, and we've got guest faculty with us today. So a couple months ago, somebody reached out to me from Gusto asking if we could talk about the economy on the show. And we don't have economics class yet at Accounting High. It's kind of perfect timing because I'm looking to fill that gap in our education curriculum. So we have Liz Wilkie on with me today, who is going to be your economics professor here. I don't think it's professors at Accounting High, just teachers, right? Instructors, faculty.
Yeah. I mean, I rose by any other name, right? Professor, teacher, mentor, whatever.
Beautiful. I love that. So Liz, why don't you introduce yourself to our students here at Accounting High? Tell us what you do at Gusto and what you do with accountants.
All right. Hi, Scotty. Hi, class. My name's Liz Wilkie. I'm the principal economist at Gusto, which is HR benefits and payroll company for over 300,000 small and medium-sized businesses. And we serve the accountants that serve those companies as well. So I actually think I have a very cool job in the tech space at all, but definitely in the HR space. So I take all of the insights about when people get paid, how they get paid, how much they get paid, how businesses are hiring, how they're letting people go. And I get to pull all that data together to talk about what's going on in the economy, how small and medium-sized businesses are facing, you know, the challenges today and like what they can do about it. And as it turns out, not just for small businesses, but accountants that serve them, that is like equally useful information so that accountants can help. So it's just small businesses think about what's ahead and how to plan for it.
Get sort of a macro view of everything because we're stuck in our day to days. So it's good for somebody to distill it for us, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea is that the big four accounting firms have like teams of economists and analysts and forecasters to give them this information. But people who are helping small businesses don't keep economists on staff. But Gusto has all of this data and we're putting it out there for them.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, we always used to talk about that. Like a lot of our tech partners, they have so much data and they do that for themselves. Who's distilling it for us or who's going out there and being proactive? And I think that's what you guys are doing. Tell me a little bit more about the research itself and what you do, how you apply that. Tell me about the research.
Yeah. So we have sort of like three pillars, and one is just economic trends and data, right? So Gusto has real-time data on hiring, on pay, on benefits, in industries, by location, by company size. And we've invested a lot in just creating data visualizations on our webpage. You can go to Gusto Data and Research. If you Google it, you'll find us. We're the number one spot. You can just go and see what's the hiring rate in my area, right, for businesses in the tech industry or the accounting industry or what have you. And it's just a real-time source of information. And so we use that information to talk about what's going on, especially in this honestly kind of nutty economic environment. And we've also done a lot of work on remote and hybrid work because honestly, it's the most exciting, interesting, tumultuous thing to happen to the workspace since unionization over 100 years ago. And then we also have a lot of research in benefits, right? And how benefits sort of fit into a total compensation package and how they affect retention and recruitment to try and give small businesses a way to sort of think about the ROI on offering these additional things beyond pay.
Yeah. I mean, I remember early stages of COVID, the first month of COVID, when everybody's running around chasing their tail, trying to figure out what's going on. Gusto was the only company that proactively, the only one that I worked with or know of that gave a ton of information and practical, like distilled it for us without expecting anything in return. But this was the onset for a lot of people of remote work and hybrid work. And so Gusto positioned themselves perfectly at that time and leveraged all of their capital, all their people to start delivering practical information for us, the accountants. You guys have positioned yourself in a good place to be the educators in this new market. This is a testament to working remotely and to what you guys have done early on in those early stages of COVID to help people distill the information. So Let's start talking about the economy then.
Yeah, so that's like my favorite first pillar, which is, you know, the economy's just doing so much stuff, honestly, since COVID. We had all this data, as you said, and you know, somebody approached me last year on my team and said, hey, I have accountant partners all the time, and their clients are asking them, what's going on in the economy? How am I supposed to think about any of this? And all these accounting partners are like, I'm an accountant, not an economist. And also these accountants are small businesses and medium businesses themselves, right? So they have the exact same questions. And, you know, my partner was like, hey, can we use our own data to tell, you know, businesses what's going on or how they should think about it? So we launched The Economy Explained late last year, and we're on our third quarterly round of just giving like a few key insights and data points. And like, here's what you should be thinking about in the next 3 to 6 months for accountants, for them as businesses, and also for their clients, right, that they're trying to advise.
Yeah, directly from the source. I've been part of Gusto's Partner Advisor Council, and that's the first I experienced that you did one of these with us, or you explained it to us in one of our meetings, and it was great. I never, you know, I don't pay attention to the news much because, you know, the news. But this is actually news that I'm interested in, and there's no pretense, or you don't have like a real agenda. I mean, the agenda is to get more people on Gusto, and obviously that's like a funnel, but it's useful knowledge, and I can trust it. I know where it's coming from. So this is great. I'm excited about this, what we're going to talk about. Overall, we're talking about the economy. Give me the too long, don't read version of this. Like, jobs are down, new hire, pay is dropping, all that. Like, let's talk about this. Give me a little bit of that.
Let me see if I can sort of succinctly do this. I feel like I try every time, and you know, the economy is a big thing, so you always feel like you're leaving something out. But I mean, I think the headlines right now, our last release was in May, so I'm going to feel free to update it, you know, with the new numbers that have just come out. But so I think the headline right now is we are getting to the slowdown that the Federal Reserve and the government has sort of wanted in order to tame inflation. Jobs are coming down. Pay is stabilizing a bit, but we are not, you know, sort of on track yet for like some big recession. And I think what we're seeing is people in the economy, consumers are getting, they're not feeling it yet, but they're trying to be like optimistic, but guarded about their spending and their activity. And I think what that means for businesses is that they're going to feel more cautious spending. And they also, I think, need to get into sort of like a safety wait and see position, because I think we're in like this really squishy unknown place right now about what the economy is going to do in the latter half of the year. And also I would tell businesses, like, if you can put off an investment for, you know, 6 months to 12 months that like isn't fully necessary, I would say do that, because it's getting really expensive to finance things and
we're
figuring out.
That's what we're feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And figuring out. Totally. Right. And I, you know, somebody, one of the accountants at the advisory council said to me, he's like, we can't keep paying $20 for a hamburger and like $30 for a, you know, a movie. Like, these things sort of have to come down. It's not good for anybody. And, you know, the thing is, we've seen these like huge wage increases last year from the tight labor market. But if inflation keeps up at 6%, you know, for another year or two, all the workers are going to be like, hey, I need a 6% increase, because that's what I'm going to be looking at next year, right? So what the Fed really cares about is that those inflation expectations don't start to carry forward, right, into future years, so that workers don't start to renegotiate like an 8 or a 10% raise every single year, because they expect inflation to be at 6 to 8% for the next few years.
It's not sustainable. None of that is. No. Yeah. I don't know. Our hamburger price is going to go down because I got a flight canceled, and American Airlines was happy enough to give me a voucher for food, or they're generous enough to give me a voucher for food. It was like a prepaid credit card thing on a ticket. And I looked at it and it was $12. And I'm like, I can't even buy a drink for $12 anymore. I can't go anywhere for $12. That hasn't caught up on their inflation side, but that's just anecdotal. Like, anywhere you go now, expect to pay at least $20 for a Happy Meal. I mean, I don't know if McDonald's has adjusted their Happy Meal prices, but yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, it's funny. There is actually an indicator of like purchasing power that's based on the price of a Big Mac. So we might very well see the Happy Meal Index as the inflation monitor. But to my knowledge, McDonald's, I'm not aware of McDonald's inflation strategy, so I won't speak to that here. But I mean, they will come down eventually, but it's a slow road, right? And it's sort of weird because the Fed sort of jacked up the interest rate, which I'm sure everybody has seen in the headlines. And they're just like, sure, tick, 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 all the way up to try and slow down the economy. But one of the things is hamburgers aren't exactly responsive to interest rates, right? So like you need a hamburger, you go get a hamburger. You don't really care what the credit card interest rate is in the economy. And so it's going to take a little while for consumers to pull back the demand they have for hamburgers, right, in order to let the supply side and the price side catch up. And I don't think we're going to see real drops in hamburger prices for like until well into next year, to be perfectly honest, unless something happens a lot sooner with consumer spending.
Fair enough. That's a good thing. I don't eat a lot of hamburgers, but the healthy food I eat's always been expensive. Anywhere you go, when you got Whole Foods or healthy food, it's going to be expensive anyway. So I'm kind of already used to that. But yeah, let's talk about the labor markets too. I mean, you've been talking about, and I don't know if I fast forward a little too much, but why are the labor markets still tight? Like what's still the issue tight here?
I mean, there's two basic reasons. Like actually there's three. I'm going to try and get it in three. So on the demand side, there are 9.8 million jobs open in the economy right now, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that's down from the 10.3 million jobs there were not too long ago. And everybody's like, yeah, that's a big decrease, right? Before the pandemic, like in 2020, right before the pandemic, there were 7.3 million jobs open. So there are almost 3 million new jobs in the economy to be filled, right? And there are not 3 million
new workers. Is it
new
jobs? Yeah, but is it new jobs or is it just jobs that aren't filled anymore?
No, it's jobs that are open and available. So the difference between old jobs that were open and new jobs that were open is about 3 million. So yeah, there's 3 million new unfilled jobs in the economy.
Mm-hmm. That's people with signs up saying help wanted.
Yeah, people like full time, please apply, $15 an hour, come join our team. And I'm sure everybody's seen those signs everywhere.
As a person all over, it's the purple banner on LinkedIn, hiring.
Yeah. Not to date myself too hard, but as a person who started their first job at like 675, I got to say, I have feelings about the entry level rate, but that's inflation. And then on the other side, you had two things happen. You had a wave of retirements, right? Because in 2019 and 2020, the stock market went bonkers and all the people who were near retirement, right? And more susceptible to COVID were like, well, hey, I have this great retirement nest egg now built up and why don't I just not go back to work because it's kind of nuts and I'm near retirement anyway. And so we have like the baby boomers are starting to retire. The stock market performance probably accelerated some of that retirement. So we just have fewer people in the labor market than we used to at all. And then there's like some additional accounting, like there's suggestions that long COVID is keeping some people out of the labor force because long COVID really sucks and it's sort of preventing people from working. But also, you know,
long
and
COVID,
I, then
somebody
I think that
who's had the who's been sick for a while and they can't go back.
Yeah.
To
okay. Yeah, long COVID can affect people for years, right? Usually it's sort of long COVID's anything that sort of affects you more than like, I think 2 weeks, maybe some amount of weeks after you've actually cleared the virus. But it can be brain fog, it can be dizziness, it can be muscle weakness. So you think about going to work, you know, while you can't like stand up or like moderate your own thoughts. Like it's a real barrier to work.
Well, is that also like depression too? Like brain fog?
Or brain fog. Well, I'm not a medical expert, so I don't actually, I think I'm going to like step back from describing all of the symptoms of long COVID. But what I do know as an economist is that it is a reason that like somewhere between an estimated 500,000 to 1 million people are out of the labor force at any given point in time. Okay. Like it's a pretty big number. And then also the jobs that existed before COVID are not the jobs that are open right now, right? So like a ton of jobs are available in health and healthcare and social assistance and in transportation and warehousing. And a lot of the jobs that existed before COVID were like retail, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, food service, et cetera. And so the jobs that people were sort of available to do aren't the jobs that people want people to do. So this is like huge mismatch, right? While we're all sort of trying to figure out, you know, what I used to be doing, what I'm doing now, and trying to make that matching happen. So just causing a ton of friction in the labor market, which is like leaving jobs unfilled as people sort of figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing a big shift too. Like in real time, real life. I was just in St. Louis last week, walking around that downtown area. So many empty stores that mm-hmm. were open pre-COVID that have changed over, or just people never came back, or maybe they just can't find anybody to work, or it was, I don't know all the reasons why they were all closed down, but just storefronts empty. It's like ghost town in some areas. Some places are building up because they're doing different things. I'm seeing mm-hmm. different types of stores open up now, like a Peloton store that doesn't sell anything. They're just there. You walk in and you talk to people, you know, it's kind of like the Apple stores. Some stores are there just as storefronts for advertising. So, you know, we're seeing all different kinds of things. I don't want to get too far off track, but is there any specific industries that you're seeing that accountants, you know, should be aware of, at least for our clients? And also, what about accounting firms themselves? We know that we've had a huge talent shortage. The pipeline's been tight, but it's worse now than ever. I mean, at least for this past year, we've experienced so hard to hire somebody in any.
Yeah. I mean, I think the accounting industry is really almost sort of a case in point, because I think the accounting industry is sort of getting it from all sides, right? You have this talent shortage, which like talent was tight before COVID, and then COVID sort of accelerated that. And then you have this sort of shift to remote and hybrid work. And then, you know, you have like all of these things coming together, and the pipeline, I think, has been dwindling for some time. And so I mean, accountants are sort of at that pointy tip of the sphere for like changing business models, changing ways of working. And you guys and ladies in accounting, I think, have been really sort of at the vanguard almost of trying to figure out how to really lean into novel recruiting tactics, employee engagement, benefits provision, and also remote and international work, distributed work, right? I've talked to a bunch of accounting firms that have said, we've started to hire internationally, right? That's where the talent is. It's eased our recruiting pipelines. And actually, that just means we have to get better at remote, right? And asynchronous work, because, you know, for talent reasons, we now have a team in the Philippines, right? Or we have a team,
you're
you know, in
my
Poland.
Firm. We used to have 12 people in the US. Now we have 6 in the US and 4 in the Philippines. And we have more business than we ever did. We're doing it with less people, and we're doing it with people across the, you know, across the world.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's one thing that I've always questioned or wondered, what's the future of this? Because if we're not able to hire, or if it's for us, at least we're all of our lower level work, all of the work that we used to try to find somebody here to do, mm-hmm. which proved to be very difficult during COVID and after, you know, as many people as we tried to hire, nobody really wanted to work, and they had a different attitude when they came into it. And that was the people that were low, like in the US based. It was just harder to find somebody that had mm-hmm. that motivation to do good work. And they were working from home. They didn't, you know, it was very difficult. Once we started hiring from the Philippines, we found an entirely different attitude toward the work, a different way of approaching the work, and they were much better workers overall. Harder workers, they got the tasks done faster than we even thought that it could be done. Mm-hmm. Everything was better. So we've experienced that, and now we were wondering, so then what happens when we want to promote somebody? You know, all of our client-facing people, they're here, and they've been doing this for years. And that pipeline, and so that was different. So I'm just curious, like, what's next? If we still can't hire people, is this going to change? Are we going to be able to hire people here, or are we going to have to start having our Philippines people be client facing and promote them?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be different for every firm, but I mean, the US is in a long-term labor shortage, right? The baby boomers are just starting to retire, right? There's not really enough workers to replace them. There's going to continue to be this sort of reshuffling. So I think that the talent challenges might ease, right, in a more recessionary environment, but they're not going to go away. So even the like decline in jobs per unemployed person is up, right? We're still 1.7 jobs available for every unemployed person in the country. Like, we're pretty darn near full employment. And that's going to be a long-term thing. I don't think that's a short-term thing for the United States just because of the demographics, right? And like the way things are shifting. So, I mean, I think it's very plausible that your folks in the Philippines are going to enjoy some new career opportunities to become, you know, more client-facing or more integrated in that side of the business, right? As you are thinking about how to develop over the long term. And I think that's going to be true for a lot of companies.
Yeah, yeah. We're still trying to navigate that because even so, like, they could be the best skilled worker and know everything, but the clients don't feel as comfortable because they want somebody that's like them and mm-hmm. that somebody that can speak the dialect. It's the dialect. They could speak English, but they don't catch all the subtle, you know, phrases and things that we do during meetings. It's a lot more dry and it's not as a full conversation. I've found they're great. They're great employees, but it's just, we found that we don't know if it's going to be as scalable, and maybe people will get more used to that. Maybe we can figure out ways to bridge all of that, but it's hard to relate to somebody that if you can't fully speak the language too and talk and have a conversation. That's difficult. I don't know. We'll see how this plays out in the future. Or we've been also considering hiring people without accounting backgrounds to be the client facing mm-hmm. and have them be the interfacing. And then the accounting backgrounds could be in the background anyway, no pun intended, but in the background doing the work, and then having somebody that's more of a client interfacing that's distilling it, sort of like, you know, your role, you're distilling all the economy for everybody. You're not an accountant. I guess you are an economist though, so you're doing that. But, you know, we need somebody that can be interfacing for the client.
But I think what you just sort of described there, Scotty, is like what economists sort of call like the reorganization of work, right? Or like increasing specialization, right? So you've sort of got like a constraint in accountants, right? And then what you're actually doing sort of in economist parlance is you're like dissecting the job, right? And you're saying, well, accountants do the accounting stuff that they need a certification and these really special skills for, but they also do this other stuff, right? That's client facing, that, you know, really requires good communication, cultural competency, the ability to build a relationship. And you're like, well, you don't have to be an accountant to do that, right? You just have to know enough about it, right, in order to make the connection a little more seamless. Mm-hmm. And I think what you are actually doing right now is sort of breaking down the accountant job into sort of all the tasks that accountants do. And you're saying, where can I get more out of the accountant part, right? And what can be sort of given to somebody else, either who's in the Philippines or, right, who's in the US and who can do that job of building relationships and doing that cultural competency. And like, you're not just doing it. A bunch of companies, I think, are doing this in various ways. Like, where's my real like constraint here? And how do I push off anything that doesn't get to that core constraint so that the people that can do that thing, right, can do it a lot more than they're currently doing it. And that's like just like a reorganization of who does what work. And you probably will see a lot more of those like highly sort of specialized roles, like relationship development, right, for like yeah. non-experts, like people who can sort of do that translation. And I think in service industries, especially as automation tends to like sort of both automates work, but also creates more sophisticated work, you're going to see, I think, a lot more demand for people who can do that human work and make a good experience, right? As the technical sides yeah. sort of start to, I don't know, get sort of smooshed around and renegotiated a little bit.
Yeah, reallocated. And I was, the next point was leveraging tech too, like using AI and using things to save us time and space to be able to do other things. And that's just a big part of this equation too. It's reshuffling and reorganizing, compartmentalizing how we do everything, but then also leveraging the tools that we have now. This generative AI is amazing. We wouldn't have even been talking about this last year. This time last year, that didn't exist. And now it's a creative arm, and also it's complements a lot of things. And I think this is also going to eliminate a lot of jobs. I think people have been talking about that. I don't think it's going to eliminate accountants, but copywriters and people that do a lot of that creative stuff, this is that arm. This is what I know if they're not leveraging this, then they're at a disadvantage. And if we're not leveraging it as accountants, we're at a disadvantage. How does that fit into all this?
Yeah. I'm in a long lineage of economists who have made predictions of like what automation will do in the future about jobs that have been wildly wrong. So sure. I'm going to try and steer clear a little bit. I honestly think it's too early, right? So like ChatGPT 3.5 came out and then like months later, ChatGPT 4 came out and we don't even sort of fully appreciate how those capabilities are different or what it can be used for. I think that there's some ideas out there that AI layers are actually really going to be made useful in like vertical structures, right? So in fact, you won't use ChatGPT, Scotty. I mean, you might, but like your accounting firm will use accounting software with ChatGPT-based industry-specific AI layered in, right, to do accounting-specific tasks. And I think that's really where a lot of the value is going to come from these generative AI tools and how well they can stitch together, right? The stack that you've already got, right? Because you're a tech-forward accountant. Mm-hmm. You've already got a tech stack, right? And what humans do...
cleanly. We've duct taped it together with Zapier.
Exactly.
And things like that, yeah.
So one of the things that I think we don't fully recognize that humans do with technology is they actually sit at the seams between a lot of technical systems. They pull something from one technical system, they make meaning out of it, and then they input it into another technical system, right, to do a new bit of work. And the ability of like the whole tech stack to reduce the number of points of contact that humans have is going to be really important for the work that humans do in the future, because you can definitely imagine a world where you have a really sophisticated AI tool that actually doesn't produce the kind of meaning and value, and humans still have to do all of that, right, sort of translating meaning-making work, and you don't actually see these huge productivity gains. Or, right, you can imagine a stack and an integrated system that actually sort of reduces the number of touch points where humans don't have to extract from one system, put into another system, and like interpret and make meaning out of it. And that's going to be the transformational part, right? Otherwise, we just have a fancy, much more conversational clippy, but that doesn't actually, you know, improve our overall productivity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's you. I love this analogy of us sitting at the seams of this, because that's all we've been doing. We just piece things together and we interpret and we move things around. And the less of that we have to do, the more interfacing we can have with clients and the more impact we can have and the more we can, everybody will benefit from that. It's not going to replace people. It's going to create new opportunities. And we won't be duct taping and piecing things together anymore, because something will be there for us to do that. I love that.
That's definitely the hope. Economists have been forecasting the end of jobs for a long time. And so far, nobody's out of work yet, right? There's been a lot more work created. And there's all the investment houses, right? Say past performance is no indicator of future returns. But all of our like human history to date has been that technology tends to create more jobs in the long run than it destroys.
It always has. And it's always been predicting the end of the world or the end. And it's always like AI is going to take over. Everything's going to be done by machines. But it went in the opposite direction too. Like, it's not doing math and it's not doing the things that we thought it would. It's doing creative stuff. I don't think anybody ever predicted that. You know, during all the movies, all the science fiction, all the books, all the economists, like, did anybody see this coming, where it would be creative and not be able to do math? Like, I've seen this. It doesn't do math very well.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't do math very well. But I mean, I would say from my own personal view is that the generative, I don't want to downplay the abilities of generative AI to create things, right? Far and away beyond what we ever thought a robot could create. ChatGPT tells the same 25 jokes to everyone, right? Like, and they're not great jokes. They're like jokes my dad would make at a party. Yeah, they're dad jokes and they're cute. But, you know, and even, you know, picture generation is, again, amazing. I do not want to downplay that for like general use, but like I've probably one time out of 10 actually use a picture that gets generated through my text prompt because it's not quite what I wanted or I didn't have it in mind. And I think what generative AI currently does is sort of like gets you a little boost, right, in the direction where you wanted to go. And you still need a lot of human creativity to sort of take it from there. But also, we're the super early stages, right, of what these models are capable of.
Yeah.
We just like do not know, you know, in 3 years even, right? It's gonna be a completely different landscape. And that, I think, is going to be, it's going to be a lot of change between now and then.
Yeah, I mean, it saves a ton of time. It's the calculator that we didn't have for that half of our brain. Mm-hmm. So we've always had calculators, Excel and everything for math. Like, that's always existed. We never had that. It's like, I've been writing raps recently, and the rap I did for Scaling New Heights, I actually used AI to get me saved me maybe 10-15 hours of writing and figuring things out. I was able to give it the right prompt, give it the right instruction to get me like 60% of the way there. It was not that great, but it's had great nuggets of
lines
and word combinations that I was able to use. And it saved me that starting point, that like writer's block stage where you finally have to get a few lines written just to get started. It did that for me. And that was a huge unlock. So I feel like, you know, I've seen use cases of accountants using it for communication, for emails, and for other things that we do, at least in the generative sense, without it being ported. Like Carbon is doing some great things with AI in their product, and other products are doing that too. And I think that's what you're saying, is we're going to see more specialization and having it save us a lot of the time and trouble that we're spending within those apps. It's going to make them easier to use and more effortless.
And yeah, I mean, inshallah, right? That's what we're all sort of hoping for.
Dope. Yeah. Cool. So,
I don't think any of the AI productivity boost is going to show up in like the GDP numbers this year. I think it's going to take a little while for that to show up.
Oh, I mean, it's just like the cloud. Like, it's just like cloud tech. You know, we didn't see how much of an impact it's going to have until more people are adopting it. And it starts to become more of the longer, like, you know, the early adoption phase is now. What's going to happen when it's the longer tail and more people are adopting that? Because that's just happening now with the cloud.
Yeah.
Just starting to see that, you know, 8-9 years later, 10 years later. So, yeah. So with all that in mind, are there any other industries like that we should be looking at too that are affected just like accountants, or that are being affected like ours?
I mean, I think there are industries that are, I mean, I think that in-person service industries, retail, salon, food and beverage industries are really still sort of scraping for talent, right? There's tons of jobs in these industries, and they're also, you know, jobs that people had some good enough outside opportunities for. So if you don't really love working food service, you can go work in a warehouse somewhere, right? Or you can take a clerical job, right, somewhere when somebody's going back to return to office. And I think we've really seen these types of businesses, sort of in-person services, stuff that people transitioned away from in COVID. They got reskilled or they made a job transition. There's sort of fewer workers that really want to do that kind of work or think that that work is sort of the best work they can do. But there's been a lot of demand, right? As people have had a bunch of savings left over from the pandemic, they want to go out, they want to travel, they want to have meals outside of the home. They want to just sort of spend on these kinds of experiences with all this sort of extra saving. And these businesses, I think, are still really struggling with talent, and they're struggling to train talent, right? So to give a really good experience, and they're struggling to keep that talent once trained. And then also, these tend to be businesses that, like, you know, have pretty thin margins, right? So, you know, this sort of constant churn or the inability to serve customers because you're understaffed, I think, is having a real profound impact for them.
A lot of their staff wasn't getting paid much to begin with because most of it relied on tips. And we're seeing a lot of tech adoption for restaurants. So I'll go to a restaurant, it'll be empty, and it's still a half hour wait because they don't have staff. But then I'll see some other restaurants that have gone to, there are no servers, there's just a QR code on your table, and you've got to do all your service yourself. How do you tip them? Mm-hmm. You got maybe a food runner or a couple of people that may attend to things or run things out to you, but otherwise, is nobody really working? And the service, I can't really speak on the service there, but it's entirely different experience now. Less humans there, more tech. That's sometimes, in most cases, people like that better. They get to choose. They don't have to wait on the server. They get to, as long as the service is fast and everything's still good. But yeah, I mean, tight margins, and you're not paying your labor that much anyway. I'm curious what's going to happen to tips. Like, are we still going to tip people? Or are we going to tip the machines that go straight to the company? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, there were discussions about tipping and whether or not it's good for the food service industry sort of long before, you know, COVID made, you know, a lot of that service automated. And I don't know that the automation of food service has sort of fundamentally changed that. In fact, if anything, there's been, because of tech, sort of an expansion of tipping anecdotally, right? Because now you don't necessarily just tip your server. You might tip the person at the counter who gives you your coffee, or you might tip, you know, the person who bagged up a bit of food for you at the retail portion of the food store, right? Because remember, a lot of restaurants went to retail, right, as well. They started selling, you know, their sauces or their soups or whatever sort of as take home. So, you know, do you tip that person? And I think what really sort of all comes down to is that this labor shortage is sort of changing the rules, right, about what it's sort of socially acceptable to do. And we don't really know what the rules are.
Well,
and we're sort of figuring it out.
It's a great point, because everywhere you go now, they flip the screen so you can choose your tip and everybody in line behind you sees. So a lot of people will tip now because of the social acceptance, or they don't want to look cheap with the person in front of them. So everybody hits a tip. So I bet you there's more tips now than there were before, because we never had that. It was always like, it's this much here. And most places don't even take cash anymore. Just hand them the card. They don't ask you, would you like to leave a tip? But everywhere does that now. Anywhere that's using Square, a Toast, or any of those other apps for their whole management system, like, they've probably seen more tips, more credit card tips.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting about that is the technology sort of is part of that conversation, right? It's part of the workflow to tip or not tip. And as more companies sort of adopt that technological tool, right, it becomes a part of, right, their workflow at their restaurant, right? Whether or not they sort of intended that or not, by simply sort of adopting the payments platform or the point of sale platform, right? They sort of, by like necessity, incorporated this whole tipping issue, right, into all the parts of their business where customers pay.
Well, I will plug that it's very easy, if you're using Gusto, to incorporate a lot of that, because when it is credit card tips and when things are in the system, it's so much easier to allocate it. When people are doing cash tips, you know, you've got to get the employee to claim that, so then you could enter it in, or the person that's entering the payroll in can enter that into their payroll. When it's all in the credit card, it's all automatic and it all pulls in. The integrations are great with Gusto. So as a user at our firm, I can attest to tips being on credit cards is a lot easier to get the restaurant the credit card tip credit for the tax return at the end of the year and everything else. Make sure it's all a court.
Makes the accounting easier.
It does make the accounting easier. So, you know, less cash is always easier for the accountants, because everything's accounted for. But let's pivot a little bit and let's talk about a little bit more about inflation, interest, consumer spending. Talk about the consumer confidence and what are we seeing in spending patterns? Like, what metrics should we be paying attention to? Like inflation.
Yeah, so consumer spending was up early this year. And so when we did our last release, I was like, oh, consumers seem pretty immune to these interest rate hikes. And they're still spending, like, they've got money to spend, which was true. They've still got a bunch of savings left over from COVID. So to this last month, consumer spending actually ticked down a little bit. And in nominal terms, it was flat. And in real terms, it was sort of down. And I think what that means is that consumers are facing a few things. One is they've spent a bit of the money that they saved up from COVID, because remember, there was a lot of households saved a lot. There was government assistance programs. There was forgiveness on a whole lot of types of payments. And that really built up the buffer that, you know, consumers and households have. So they were sitting on a bunch of money, and then they've been sort of drawing down that money sort of ever since things started opening and people started to feel more safe. And now we're sort of drawing down that money, but also a lot of the government assistance programs have come to an end. We're about to start paying back student loans. And so there are a lot of people who are about to see increased cost in terms of like repayments on student loans or other types of payment forgiveness. And so what I am interpreting here as an economist is that consumers don't necessarily feel so bad about their current situation, because we didn't see this like big drop in spending, but they are starting to feel a little bit nervous about what their spending and what their financial situation might look like in the coming month, 2 months, 3 months, right into the fall, as some of these things come back online and they have more obligations and a little bit less buffer to take care of. So, I mean, we haven't really seen like a big pullback that like the Fed honestly wants to see from these interest rate hikes in order to like really slow down the economy. But I think that there are these sort of big question marks now into the fall. Like, what is going to be the effect of student loan payments coming back online, right, on consumer spending? And I think we can not look forward into the future and think it's all going to be fine because consumers still have a bunch of cash. They're also about to have a lot more obligations for that cash. And I think we'll see a bigger slowdown into the fall. So businesses, particularly for like discretionary spending, right, there will be fewer meals out. There will be fewer, you know, weekend trips on a splurge. There will be fewer, I think, of those sort of like feel good purchases, right? Yeah, as consumers are starting to like tighten their belts a little bit to make space for those obligations.
Well, also for an extended period of time, we had 100% meals write off too. Like as far as taxes go, like we were able to write off 100% of meals to start, getting people to go out more. Now that stopped. So we're back to 50%. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, it's not going to be as much of a tax benefit to be going out either. So people are going to be spending less. So what does that mean then for us accountants or for businesses if people are spending less?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, try to help these businesses figure out their cash reserves and to maintain like a regular cash flow. It's really hard for small businesses. I don't need to tell you that it's hard for small businesses to sort of manage their cash flow, right? They don't sit on a ton of buffer. If a vendor pays them late or they get an invoice sort of delayed, like that can really throw a wrench in the works. And when you are looking at even less cash coming in, right, that can get a lot choppier, right? And it can either force small businesses into taking credit, right, at currently pretty high rates that they don't, you know, they that were sort of add an extra burden. So I would tell accountants that, you know, if you're looking at a business that mostly makes a lot of its revenue from direct to consumer spending like retail or food and beverage or what have you, like help them to have a conversation about how they're really going to manage their costs into the next 3 to 6 months, at least until sort of the holiday spending season, if that's a big portion of their income, and to really try and build up like a more stable strategy for cash flow. Because I think as consumer spending sort of drops off a little bit, you know, what we'd like to avoid is for those small businesses to have to go to the credit market, right, at a really, you know, a percentage that's a lot higher than what they might have paid, you know, last year or the year before, and have to sort of take that on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Patience with that. So what's the bottom line here for accountants? You know, based on everything that's happening, what should we be talking about with our clients? What should we keep in mind? And what should we think about for our firms?
Yeah. For business owners in general and for accountants, I think specifically, I would say the talent shortage is not going anywhere. So even though you don't need to keep up with the wage increases of last year, pay is stabilizing a little bit, like really focus on investing in that team, because if somebody leaves, it's not going to be so much easier to hire a new person in their place. So focusing on retention, engagement, benefits that round out pay and compensation is going to be really important, like well into the future. And then also really think about where to find additional cash reserves, retained earnings to manage that cash flow so that you can avoid going to those financial markets. I think for businesses that can do remote and hybrid work, like think about extending that workforce. Consultants, contractors, international workers, right, have proven to be a really interesting source of work. We recently did a survey, like 1 in 5, I think, small businesses and like professional services already have a remote international employee. And so we're already seeing that businesses are starting to do that. But I think accountants can be really pivotal in thinking through that conversation with small businesses. I'm sorry.
International sounds so much better than outsourced. It just sounds more, it sounds higher level. Like that's, I like that. I'm going to start using that.
All right. Well, you're welcome to use it. I'm sorry. I feel like you asked me for a summary, so let me see if I can do it again in bullet points.
Sure, yeah.
Invest in retention and engagement, because that work's not going to be so easy to replace for a while. Figure out cash flow maintenance and reserves buildup, tax credits, spending, contract renegotiation, any of those things. And then also really think about where to find, you know, alternative types of talent. fractional workers, part-time, international talent, contractors, consultants, etc. They are going to be part of the new workforce. And so helping your clients to get there and think about that is going to be really important.
Oh, those are three great things to be doing, and be just being more intentional with the longevity of the people you have now. I like that one, you know, just investing in retention. That's a great way to prevent future problems too.
Yeah. One of the ones I was talking about with another accounting firm was actually 401ks, because they're relatively cheap as benefits go to provide relative to health insurance or what have you, but they have a really big retention impact. So we did a study using the data at Gusto that shows that the cost of installing and administering a 401k has over 100% ROI in terms of the reduction in the risk that an employee quits over the next 12 months. It's like a significant improvement, and for a pretty low investment on the part of employers.
It's stickier. That and health insurance too.
Health insurance is a big one too. What's unique about 401ks is that I can't use the access that my partner or spouse has to a 401k, right? Whereas I can potentially get on their health insurance, right, if my employer doesn't provide it.
Oh.
Or I can, you know, maybe get in the private market, but a 401k is non-transferable and it's additive, right? Like it only adds to like my benefit or my household's benefit in ways that not even health insurance does. So I don't want to downplay the importance of health insurance. It's really critical, but 401ks are sort of unique and different because they, you know, are additive to your spouse's 401k or any other retirement savings that you might have.
Yeah. I always found my team and the people I hired that were of a younger generation, or at least like my generation or younger, they don't care as much about the retirement stuff. At least on the surface, they never really do. Maybe they will as they get older, but I think even now, a lot of people aren't like taking it as seriously. Like when we started doing a 401k, some people didn't even contribute. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess it just kind of depends on somebody's life position. But how do you get people to care about that more? How do you increase like the desire, the ability of that?
I would say, you know, if everybody gets to choose, right, what they value. There's two things in what you said. One is, how do I get my folks to care about the fact that they have a 401k? And I think, you know, I don't know how you get a 22-year-old to care about a 401k, you as an employer, right? But I can tell you that your 32-year-old employee probably cares a lot more about a 401k, right? And your 42-year-old employee definitely cares about their 401k because it just looks a lot closer, right? And so, I mean, you know, providing that benefit isn't necessarily for your younger workers, right? It's for, you know, all of your workers who value that. And then how do you get people to contribute? And their behavioral economics has a lot to say, which is you automatically enroll them and they have to opt out instead of opt in. And then they'll get there by default. And then they'll probably be pretty happy after the fact that they had it. And they also have the freedom to say, that's not for me. I don't really want that. I just want the money now by unenrolling.
Oh, dope. Yeah. Well, this is great. And assuming this does well and things can continue, you're going to still keep doing this Economy Explained. Can you give us a sneak peek of what's happening next? We're in the third quarter of the year right now, right?
Yeah, our next release will come out, I think, at the very end of July or the very beginning of August. So we're sort of collecting data now, and we're going to be looking at, you know, pay increases. We're going to be looking at, you know, how hiring is ticking up or down. We're also, I think, going to be looking at some of the specific industries and how they're doing, like consumer spending across different categories. But actually, you've sort of almost got the interim report right now, because I've incorporated a lot of the recent releases sort of into my talking points here. But you know what? The economy is a funny, funny thing. And a lot of things could happen between now and 4 weeks from now. So, you know, hopefully we'll end up about where we are in this podcast, because things will keep continuing as they are. You kind of don't want an economy to change really fast because it creates chaos. But, you know, we'll definitely see. But I think we're looking into a fall where some of these like cumulative recessionary type effects will cause a bit more of a slowdown before we bump into holiday season.
Awesome. All right. Well, this is great. all of it's great advice and great information. And I appreciate you coming on as our economist for economics at Accounting High. Thanks, Liz.
Thanks, Scotty.
Class dismissed.